This is the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio. My friend, the former governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, the legal analyst and political analyst for ABC, and the author of Let Me Finish, Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the Power of In-Your-Face Politics, joins us now. Chris Christie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Happy to be here, Dan. Thanks.
So let me start out from looking at the book. It is tough to assess the following question, which is, are you still a supporter of Donald Trump?
Yes, I am.
So you still consider yourself a Donald Trump supporter?
Absolutely.
So no regrets about becoming the first governor to support him in the campaign, et cetera?
No, Dan, because listen, elections are a binary choice, right? You don't get to vote for who you want to vote for. You get to who they offer. I'll be clear. Donald Trump was not my first choice for president. I was. but I lost and he won the nomination, and I still prefer him to Hillary Clinton.
But you do say in your book, you say the president didn't exactly pick the best people. You say instead he got the revolving door of deeply flawed individuals, amateurs, grifters, weaklings, convicted and unconvicted felons who were hustled into jobs they were never suited for, sometimes seemingly without so much as a background check via Google or Wikipedia.
Yeah, amen. That's it. And I think that a large part of that, Dan, as it says in the book, is about the fact that, you know, Steve Bannon, Jared Kushner, and Rick Dearborn, throughout the transition work. You know, I've been chairman of the transition from May to November to a couple of days after the election. We had 140 people working in Washington, D.C. on everything for the potential new administration, from three people fully vetted for each cabinet position and senior staff position. Draft executive orders that have been reviewed by lawyers with experience at both DOJ and the Office of the White House Counsel. We had a day one plan, a 100-day plan, and a 200-day plan. And we had every day of the transition planned out with a theme and cabinet members to roll out in those particular weeks. So they threw all those 30 binders of material, Dan, that they threw out, and they worked from the back of an envelope for 73 days. And that's how you get those kind of folks.
So when Donald Trump says he has surrounded himself by the best and the brightest, that is not something that you would necessarily agree with.
He has some that are, but not the majority, no.
And are there, I mean, look, you talk a lot in this book, and it's in the title of the book, about Jared Kushner. Would he fall into the category of one of the unqualified people who are working in high positions in the administration?
He has a category of his own, Dan, and that's family. And, you know, I think it's always hard to have family in an official government capacity. You know, Jared's in his mid-30s, real estate investor from New Jersey, and a family business. And I think, you know, those traits, while he's good at what he did there, don't necessarily prepare you to be the most influential advisor to the President of the United States, but being a relative gives you the access to do that. And I think that's why it's always very, very difficult to have relatives with you, because if they make some big mistakes that you'd fire other people for, it's tough to fire someone who you have to have Thanksgiving dinner with. And I think that's kind of the situation.
And you're convinced that he effectively pushed you out once the campaign was over?
No doubt. If you read the book, Dan, you see that, you know, that started on the day I was named as transition chairman, when he tried to stop it by coming into a meeting with me and then candidate Trump that he was not invited to, and arguing right in front of me that I was untrustworthy to be the transition chairman. So, to say the least, we didn't start off on the best foot. And And from what I understand from people who were very close to him during the campaign, that he continued that type of talk to the candidate right up and through Election Day. And as Steve Bannon put it, he's been putting an axe to your head ever since I got here.
Do you think that Jared is going to get indicted?
You know, you and I know this game. I think it's very hard to tell anything that Bob Mueller is going to do. He's been so quiet with his information. He's been doing exactly what a prosecutor is supposed to do, which is keep everything secret unless and until you're going to file charges. So I just don't know. I don't have any clue myself that he did anything that was illegal, but I certainly don't know what Bob Mueller knows.
And obviously, you know, some of this relates to false statements that he made on security clearance forms, and there the question would be, was it intentional or just accidental, as he claims? But you have to admit that when you look at how many times he's had to revise his answers, it does start to feel like more than just negligence.
Well, that's problematic, and it's obviously proven to be very problematic for his getting any type of security clearance. And from what's been reported, it's prevented him from getting the top security clearance from the CIA.
What about Roger Stone? Now, you've said that you do not think that Roger Stone is the end of this investigation, and yet we heard the acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, say it was all wrapping up.
Well, I think Matt was a little more nuanced than that, but, you know,
not much, not much.
Not a lot. I only said a little more, Dan. But I think, listen, I think that it, I don't think it ends with Roger Stone. I really don't. I think they're still working. I think you can tell they're still working. And in the end, you know, we'll see what Matt Whitaker meant by almost wrapped up. I don't know what he really meant by that. And almost, somebody's almost could be defined differently than somebody else's. But, I mean, almost relative to how long it's been going on, or almost relative to, like, next week. I don't know which one he meant.
What about Don Jr.? He seems to be the one with the biggest target on his head. And, you know, it does seem as more evidence comes in that it's hard to reconcile what he said to Congress with what we're learning through the indictments of Robert Mueller.
Well, listen, I can only tell you that all my interaction over the campaign with Don Jr. was all really candid and honest and forthright. I mean, Don Jr. in my experience with him was somebody who, like, told you whatever he was thinking and told it to you straight. And so that is at odds with the stuff that we're seeing. So, you know, I don't know which way that's going to go. And I'm careful to try to see, you know, what exactly did he say before Congress? We don't know exactly all that he said before Congress. So given my personal experience with him, Dan, which had been honest and forthright, I want to be careful about throwing stones here until we know more information, because my own experience with Don was that, you know, he was inexperienced in politics, but he was not somebody who I found in his interactions with me to be anything other than honest and forthright.
Well, did he honestly tell you that Jared had torpedoed you?
No, but to be candid, I never asked. So maybe I should have, but I never asked him, because once I was out, I was out, and I didn't. What I cared the most about was my relationship with the then president-elect, now president, and I didn't care much about trying to rebuild, you know, and reconfigure what the relationship was and what role Jared had. I felt fairly confident from what I already knew that I didn't need any further confirmation.
You know, one of the things that I think is the most sort of underreported fact with regard to Don Jr. is this, you know, the FBI got wiretaps obtained by the Spanish police regarding this guy, Alexander Torshin, a high-level Russian official. And there's been a lot of talk about why Don Jr. was meeting with Torshin at an NRA convention, et cetera. But putting that aside for a minute, the prosecutor, the Spanish prosecutor who handed over those wiretaps, specifically said that Mr. Trump's son should be concerned about the wiretaps. That seems to me, I mean, either this guy is just talking nonsense or there's a there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember reading that and thinking the exact same thing that you did, which was either this guy is really careless with his words or, you know, that's a problem. It's going to be very interesting to see what, if anything, comes of that. But certainly the language that was used was pretty aggressive.
Now, let's talk about
a prosecutor.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about whether the Mueller report is going to be made public. You know, I've been saying for a while now, I don't see how it isn't made public. And yet, you know, it seems that now there's more speculation this week and this weekend about the possibility that the report will not be made public. Maggie Haberman from The New York Times saying that for all the speculation that Trump regrets appointing Barr accomplished something in his testimony that Trump folks were thrilled with, laying the groundwork for the possibility the report won't be released. And then you get a former federal prosecutor, professor at, he's a professor, actually, a law professor, Ross Garber, saying any Mueller report that's detailed and comprehensive won't be released. Hard to view Barr's testimony any other way. They'll say grand jury secrecy and executive privilege. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's going to be really hard. Now, listen, there may be parts of it that wound up being redacted because of national security interests. And Barr's going to have to make those judgments for what he needs. What I'm sure he's well aware of is those judgments are going to be brutally scrutinized by a Democratic House. And the idea that they're going to sit idly by and allow a lot of this to be redacted or all of it to be withheld, I think is folly. I think that, you know, a lot of the Mueller report, if not all of the Mueller report, is going to come out. I understand if Bill Barr thinks that there's some things in there that compromise national security and he's willing to legitimately stand up for that. I understand how that can happen. But I think he's got to err on the side of transparency here.
But the problem is, you know, when you start defining, you know, national security, this is the same national security that the president says he doesn't believe, right? His whole claim is, I don't believe any of this whole Russia thing is a hoax. The whole thing. I don't believe so what's the national security issue if the claim from the president is none of it's true anyway?
Well, the only thing I can think of, right, is sources and methods. I mean, that if
okay.
In fact, Mueller, by saying some of the things that he says or discussing some of the things he discusses, is somehow tipping off sources that we have that are confidential or methods that we use to obtain intelligence. Whether or not the president thinks the intelligence itself is valid, those sources and methods, I know, I mean, you know from our experience, are stuff that the FBI and the CIA and the NSA are very reluctant to have compromise because it could involve someone losing their life potentially based on a source issue or on a method issue, precluding us from using that in the future because it will no longer be effective because it'll be publicly known. So I could see that more than a substantive issue, more a source and method issue.
Talking to former Governor Chris Christie, the author of Let Me Finish, Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the Power of In-Your-Face Politics. Are you troubled with the amount of contacts that we've now learned that the Trump campaign had with the Russians broadly?
Well, it surprises me because...
Not just surprises. Does it trouble you?
Well, let me start off with why it surprises me. because in my time in working with the campaign, which was late February to early May, when I then moved over to the transition and started to assemble the transition, I didn't see any evidence of that. And I was never contacted, you know, by any Russians or asked by any Russians to meet with me. And, you know, I was the first major person to endorse the president, and I was chairman of the transition. So that's why it surprised me.
But we now know. I mean, you're not challenging, right? I mean, you think that it's right. It's pretty clear now that
there was a lot of contact.
Right. That the Trump campaign had enormous contacts with the Russians, according to the New York Times, over 100 people, whether it's 100, whether it's 50, whatever the number is, it's just an enormous number. So now that you know that, are you troubled by it?
Well, I want to know what was discussed. I mean, I think it's an indication as much of an inexperienced campaign as it was of anything else. These were folks who didn't listen to their campaign lawyers or didn't even tell them some of the stuff that was going on, which was a huge mistake, and a general disdain they had for lawyers, which I think they're now going to regret. I think also the time that Paul Manafort was involved is a time when a lot of this stuff was going on. And given Manafort's previous relationships in Russia, in Ukraine, that I'm less surprised of it for that reason during that period of time. Again, I think we want to see substantively what occurred, what Bob Mueller has been able to uncover. This much I'm pretty sure of. You know, Bob Mueller has used every tool in the toolbox to be able to find out everything he can find out about Russian contacts with the Trump campaign. And let's see what he's got to say about it. I'm looking forward to hearing what he had to say, because I think we spent this much time and energy. This country has been distracted, you know, by all of this to some extent. Certainly the president's agenda has been distracted. So let's see what Bob Mueller has to say, because I have confidence, as I've said to you from the beginning, in his honesty and his integrity. So let's see what he's got to say about all this.
Speaking of honesty and integrity, do you consider Donald Trump to be an honest man?
Well, I would say this. He's been honest with me. Now, what I've also said to people is, I recognize, and I think others should recognize as well, that this is a guy who's been a salesman his whole life and has engaged in hyperbolic rhetoric for as long as I've known him. And he's always selling, he's always pushing, he's always trying to convince you his point of view is right. But I think at times that strays into things that aren't accurate. And so on key important things with me, he's told me the truth.
For example, when he pretends that he fired Secretary Mattis as opposed to Secretary Mattis resigning, that's honest?
I believe that's face-saving is what that's called.
Okay, but that's a lie. It's a face-saving lie, right?
Well, listen, Dan, I think lots of people, in the same token, some people who are fired are allowed to say they resigned so that, you know, they can save face for the next job or whatever. I think that stuff goes on, and the question of whether that's a, you know, quote-unquote lie or whether that's something that in business or social circles we allow to be used is a different thing.
But it's not true. I mean, it's just not true, right?
I mean, well, I understand that, Dan, but sometimes, you know, we'll engage in conversations with folks where we may not be completely honest. We might not tell people exactly what we think, or we may sugarcoat it a little bit, because that's socially what's acceptable or necessary in certain situations. So I'm not trying to justify when things go completely off the rails and, you know, says something that turns out to be demonstrably false. For that, he has to be accountable. But I do think there's also something that's a little different about this president as opposed to others who have been born and raised in politics.
Let's just say that the president carries an abundant amount of sugar around with him then.
Well, I can agree with that. So yeah. I'll go with you on that one.
Donna from North Carolina joins us. Donna, thanks for holding. What do you got?
Hi there, Governor Christie. First of all, what I would say is I grew up in New Jersey, bred there, left there in 95 and moved to the South. I've been living in Charlotte for the last 15 years. And here's what I would say. I hear you talking about how Trump made the wrong decisions in terms of, you know, allowing his, you know, his transition team, you know, basically threw out, you know, the plan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Trump could have stopped that, and he didn't. So why is it that Trump gets off scot-free? Why is that just a reflection of, let me finish, in the words of your book,
yep.
Why isn't that not a reflection of completely poor judgment?
Well, I think if you read the book, you're going to see that I don't let him off the hook on that. I'm sure what these folks said to him was, we've got the whole thing handled, and we're going to be taken care of. We're going to be taking care of things, and this will be okay. And I'm sure he was thinking about a lot of different things at that time, and taking their word for it. My point is, he took the word for it from a group of people who he shouldn't have. And he has to be accountable for that. And I certainly lay that accountability at his feet in the book.
Thanks for the call, Donna. Let's take Carol from Detroit. Carol, how you doing? What do you got?
Hi. I just want to ask Governor Christie, do you have ambitions of getting into the Trump administration, or should I say getting back into it?
I don't. I've been offered 6 different positions in the administration, cabinet level positions, and I turned them all down because there were none of them that I really wanted to do. So, you know, I never say never to it, because I think if your president calls, you take the phone call and you listen. But so far, I've said no to each one of them.
Thanks for the call, Carol. Governor Christie, there are a lot of people on the right who, every time you talk about the Mueller investigation, they say, what about Hillary? What about Hillary? Are you one of the people who think that the Hillary Clinton investigation was not thorough or politicized to the point where the decisions that were made for political reasons?
Listen, I think that this is one of the areas where Jeff Sessions kind of let the country down. I don't think Bob Mueller has anything to do with this. I think Bob Mueller was given a particular task, which was to look at the issue of Russian interference with the 2016 election and Russian collusion. And he wasn't given the task of looking into Hillary Clinton. And so I don't blame Bob Mueller for any of this, but I do say to Jeff Sessions that if there were things that have arisen out of the Mueller investigation, such as the things like Michael Cohen, that it should have been referred to someone else to take a look at. And I do think that some of the stuff that's come out from the text messaging that was going on amongst FBI employees and surrounding the dossier are things that at least merit some looking into.
But they have been, they have been looked into it, right? I mean, the IG from the FBI did a deep dive on the Hillary Clinton investigation and is the reason we know a lot of what we know about exactly what happened there, and in the end concluded that while there was the appearance of politicization based on the text messaging that were sent between two people, that there is no indication that that impacted the decisions that were made ultimately not to indict.
Well, you know that there's a difference between a criminal investigation and an IG investigation. And, all I'm saying is that I think that Attorney General Sessions had an obligation to be able to try to get all of these questions answered surrounding the 2016 election in a definitive way by allowing those same people who are investigating in terms of, the FBI, and not just leave it to the IG. I don't think he approached it the right way. But by the way, that's not the first thing or only thing I think that Jeff Sessions, fumbled in all this. I think it's caused people to have doubts about it.
All right, but that's perception. I'm asking you, I think it's pretty clear. We know just about everything that could be known about Hillary Clinton and the server and the emails.
I'm not talking about the server. I'm not talking about the server and the emails. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the Clinton campaign's involvement with the dossier and the Clinton campaign's involvement with talking to people, who were involved with foreign intelligence overseas and hiring those folks through law firms to be able to do this work, and then having that work wind up somehow at the FBI. I think there's a problem with that.
It's not necessarily a problem.
It should be looked at,
right?
Saying the problem is there's a perception problem with
right,
that.
Right, perception.
There may not be a criminal problem with it, but the way to have definitively dispensed with that question one way or the other and with that perception was for it to be investigated as thoroughly as all this other stuff is being investigated. And I don't think just an IG investigation was sufficient.
But it does sound like you are satisfied that the investigation of Hillary Clinton with regard to her emails and her use of a private server while at the State Department, et cetera, is resolved.
Oh, yeah. Listen, on the email server stuff, I think that stuff was looked at. You can agree or disagree with the conclusion that self-appointed Attorney General Jim Comey came to. But the fact of the matter is, I think it was thoroughly looked at.
Well, do you agree with it?
Do I agree with the conclusion he came to?
Yeah.
I don't know enough about it, Dan, to be able to agree or disagree.
Oh, come on.
With the conclusion.
We know everything.
No, I really
about
don't.
That. Come on.
I don't know enough about what they uncovered. And I don't think he, remember, this is part of the problem where he went halfway, right? He shouldn't have done anything at all except said, we see no grounds for prosecution. Well, first of all, he should have never said it. It should have been the Deputy Attorney General who
right.
said it.
Right.
But he decided to make himself, you know, both judge, jury, and executioner. Once he did, he should have kept his mouth shut. He shouldn't have talked about how reckless or careless or...
I agree with that, but I guess I'm just saying that I'm saying I don't know what other information that you want about the Hillary Clinton. I mean, we now know it has been so thoroughly investigated, the Hillary Clinton server case, that I think that it doesn't mean that she didn't do anything wrong. Just so you know, I've come out and I've said I think she was wrong. I don't think it's true that she didn't violate State Department rules. I think that's her trying to protect herself. I think if she were still at the State Department, in theory, there could be action taken against her for it. But that I didn't think, based on what the law is, that it rise to the level of a crime. And that's based on the fact that we know a lot about that investigation.
We know a lot about it, but we don't know everything that Jim Comey knew. And so I'm not saying that I think I'm telling you, I'm agreeing with you that I believe that it was thoroughly investigated. The problem is the way Comey handled it, again, leaves a perception problem with people. And that's why process is important in all these things.
All right, let me ask
and that's
you,
the only point I'm attempting to make.
One more question. What do you think is the most important thing in the Mueller investigation that the public is not focusing on? Is there something you think that ought to be focused on more?
By the public?
Yeah, that we're not, that sort of, you know, for example, I've said that I think that the area we're not focusing enough on is the NRA connection. I think that there's going to be a thorough investigation from Mueller's team on any connection between the NRA and the Russians funneling money potentially into the Trump campaign. That's what I think. I'm wondering if there's anything you think about the investigation that's not being focused on enough.
I think that there's been really thorough reporting when possible about what's being looked at and what's being focused on. As I said before, I think that the special counsel and his folks have been very discreet about what stuff has been allowed to become public. Most of the stuff that has mostly been from witnesses themselves who have been willing to discuss things publicly and not through leaks. And I think the public has a pretty good handle on the various areas that are being looked at. Now, that's based on what we know, but I think you and I both know there could be stuff that comes out here that we had no clue. We didn't see it coming.
That's for sure. Yep. Chris Christie, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate
it. Dan, thank you.
This has been the Dan Abrams Law and Crime Podcast with SiriusXM Radio.